Welcome, friends, neighbors, countrymen. Gather around the internet, for the infotainment podcast is about to begin. I would like to welcome my new listeners and my older listeners that have stuck with this program to my 100th episode of Infotainment. Today I have a special guest, and she's been on this podcast before, and we have discussed the issue of bipolar disorder, both 1 and 2. But today I'd like to keep it a little more lighter. And I don't know if you know this, but I did stand-up comedy in the cities a little bit, open stages mostly. And so maybe it was kind of a precursor, good learning experience for this. So, and I will let her introduce herself.
Well, thank you, Randy. It's such a pleasure to be here again. And congratulations on your 100th podcast. That's really fabulous. My name is Julie Linsenmeyer, and I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner. And I work in two different places, Southwest Mental Health and the Avera Clinic.
And we are enjoying the monsoon season here in the upper Midwest.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll all start growing rice patties. No corn and beans this year.
I posted a picture. It was kind of posted up on Facebook before, but I reposted it as a picture of Chris Farley, who looks like he's screaming and with a wet head and says, "For the love of God, stop raining." And that's what we need around here.
Yeah, this is getting really old.
And did you know, while I was doing the stand-up comedy up in the Twin Cities, I was a waiter at a kind of upscale restaurant, and somebody came in, and they were a little difficult. They said, "Well, I don't eat meat, dairy, poultry. And I also don't eat gluten." And they go, "What do you recommend?" And I said, "Well, a glass of water or a taxi."
I bet they didn't take to that very kindly.
But today, I wanted to bring up some of the more interesting facts on the brain, which... Or stories of the brain that are a little lighter than the last time, and that Julie knows a lot more about than I do. It fascinates me that people with a total recall of everything they have ever done in their lives, how would you like to have that ability?
I don't think I would want that ability. I'm not sure I would see that as a blessing.
That would be harsh. Some people discover it when they're like 10 through like 14. So, and I don't really know whether they just know that, or they can remember things from that date forward, or they can go back to when. I did read one person that could remember her second birthday party and what toy she got. And the birthday cake and all that. It's just amazing. And one of the factors of that, it runs through all the people that have it, and it's very few. I've read different numbers at different places, but the number's really low, thankfully, for a lot of people, because some people view it as a curse.
I I might be more in that group. It would be really helpful, I think, when you were going through college or, you know, some advanced degree. It would be really helpful when you have those senior moments and you're thinking, oh, what is that word on the tip of my tongue? But maybe it doesn't work that way. Maybe it's more just in terms of remembering memories.
And the one that said it was a curse, she said that she couldn't watch very much television. She normally stuck to newspapers because television, when there was bad news, it would come up more vividly in the future and be a stressor on her. So she wanted a cure for it because, but Mary Lou Henner goes through it, you know, just like it's nothing. So she was on 60 Minutes and her kids were like teenagers and they give her dates and tell us what happened on this date. And she'd tell them what date was Valentine's Day in this year and kind of like that. And she'd tell them the date. And they took an episode of Taxi. It was like the fourth episode they ever did. And she recalled what color dress she was wearing. And she also remembered some of the script and parroted it back to the person. And I found that fascinating. I would have liked to have known if she could have gone through the whole show and said every line that right. she said in that show.
That really would be fascinating. It might bog your brain down, but it doesn't sound like she felt that way.
But they did say it takes a long time to study this, like years, because everyone's a little different. The one that thought it was a curse, she could snap things off right away. Maybe that's why it seemed bad to her, whereas Mary Lou Henner had to stop and think about it a little bit more, but it did come back to her. So that's just a fascinating topic to me. And they say if eventually that it may be a cure, if not a cure, helpful in like Alzheimer's, memory loss.
I think either way, you'd probably be a pretty fun party guest.
Yes, that would be.
So you might get tired of it after a while, but
yeah, what happened on this date and stuff like that. But the one they asked what's memorable about this date? Well, that's when the Challenger just blew up, and she knew that, and it's just, and also they did say that most of them have to be really organized with everything, like Mary Lou Henner had just shoes a certain way, almost on the order of OCD.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I do have 10 strange stories about the human brain that you can react to whenever. And well, actually not 10, a few of them I printed out. It wasn't letting me copy them the way I do to print them out, but it goes on that the brain is an amazing organ, without a doubt. Our little gray cells hold enough secrets and strange stories to fill an entire book, or a list for that matter. And it talks about John McCloskey. He wasn't a pleasant man. After escaping from an Arizona prison, he killed an elderly couple, burned their bodies, and stole their truck. Eventually, McCloskey was recaptured, tried, and found guilty of murder. However, the sentencing phase was a little more difficult. McCloskey's defense team had employed a unique strategy that left jurors unsure of what they should do. The lawyers had presented them with scans of McCloskey's brain, and the images were definitely weird. The PET scan showed 10 areas of his brain that were strangely inactive. On the other hand, 17 areas were working overtime. For example, I know I'm going to butcher this word. Maybe you can re-say it after I say it. But the amygdala?
Amygdala?
Amygdala.
Yep, good try.
Yeah,
you had the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
And he couldn't interpret danger signals properly, often sent like false alarms to the rest of the brain, causing him to act impulsively. Usually the frontal lobe keeps that area of the brain crazy tendencies under control. But McCluskey his brain was deformed and defective, according to his lawyers, but allowing his wilder impulses to reign unchecked. The defense attorneys also noted that his cerebellum was damaged by a stroke, which in turn affected his ability to make plans. Basically, he was a victim of bad biology and unable to commit premeditated murders. Thus, killings had been spontaneous and out of McCluskey's control.
Well, that would be an interesting take on it. Huh.
I don't know what if brain scans I don't think typically used in a murder trial, I wouldn't think.
I truly don't know, but that sure was a novel way to go about it. And many times, not always, many times when someone has had a stroke, their personality can change. So I don't know if they went into what his personality was like prior to the stroke.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be a tough one for the jury to decide whether, I don't know if that was, had the death penalty there or not. But death penalty versus life in prison or confined to a mental hospital for the rest of his life. But
did the story say what the jurors decided?
Well, despite the prosecution's counter arguments, the defense team achieved their goal. The jury couldn't decide whether McCluskey should die. I guess it was. Should have read further on, which meant that he was sentenced to life without parole. His brain had saved him from walking the Green Mile. However, the jury's decision poses several interesting questions. Should abnormal brains be seen as mitigating factors or evidence of dangerous behavior? And where does free will come into this scenario? We'll let you deliberate for yourself. Now, in the case of serial killers, I don't know if he would even, maybe a scan would be helpful in studying differences in the brain versus someone who would not ever think of doing that.
I'm not exactly sure if a PET scan or brain scans would be helpful. I truly don't know. But there is an anomaly in that particularly people who are psychopaths, those are going to be the people who are more like the serial killers. They have a different autonomic nervous system than you and I would. And so, for example, if they're telling a lie, they don't show typical traits of that. Their heart rate may not go up. They may not have a little increase in their blood pressure. And so that's how they can deceive a polygraph test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that people have stuck stuff in their shoe like a tack, and each time they'd ask a question, I don't understand totally how that would work, but some people I heard on another podcast where they would ask a question like, are you an intravenous drug user? And the person would have to think of something, another question, like, do they live in a house? And the answer is no. And that would be the truth for the question they made up in their head. And that'd be another way they could deceive a polygraph.
Interesting. Yeah. I hope you and I never have to remember those tricks.
Also, I do have a thing about Albert Einstein, who was clearly a genius. And time to time, people wondered how his brain worked. And pathologist Thomas Harvey wondered the same thing and decided to find out the answer. But before his death in 1955, Einstein stipulated that his remains were to be cremated. The last thing he wanted was for mobs of students gathering around his tombstone, murmuring E equals MC squared over and over. He also wanted his brain fried as well. However, Tom Harvey plucked out his brain during the autopsy. And this was a huge no-no, and he was in danger of losing his job. Harvey convinced Einstein's son to okay the operation, claiming his dad's brain needed to be studied for science. However, Harvey wasn't a neuroscientist and didn't know what he was doing. When hospital officials asked him to hand over the brain, he refused and was fired. His next step was to drive to Philadelphia, where he found a technician to slice Einstein's brain into over 200 cubes. Over the next 40 years, the little squares ended up in the weirdest places. Harvey stored them in jars in his basement, and they were almost met destruction at the hands of his wife when Harvey moved to Kansas. He kept the bits in a box under a beer cooler.
Okay, that's also novel.
I call this discount science. I don't think that proper scientific methods were used when keeping the brain stored.
Especially not Einstein's brain.
Yeah. And they were regularly admired by Naked Lunch author William Burroughs. And Harvey once accidentally left them at the house of Einstein's granddaughter, who wasn't too pleased. As for the scientific study, they didn't exactly pan out. Harvey mailed pieces of the brain to various researchers, but most neurologists weren't keen on analyzing Einstein's brain. The few scientists who did show interest cranked out studies that were mostly inconclusive or discredited. Disappointed, Harvey eventually returned the brain to Princeton Hospital and died in 2007. Nobody ever tried to steal his brain.
A little ironic there.
Now, I also have a story about Anatoly Bogorsky. Might be the luckiest scientist of all time. On July 13th, 1978, the Soviet researcher was repairing a particle accelerator, intimidatingly named the Synchrotron U-70, and he was repairing a faulty. This doesn't end really well. Well, it could have been a lot worse, I guess. But he was repairing a piece of equipment on it. He made a slip-up worthy of Tim Taylor, the tool man. while poking around the machine, Bogorsky stuck his head inside the accelerator and straight into the path of a proton beam made out of hydrogen atoms without electrons. Proton beams are often used to obliterate cancer cells, but only in carefully controlled doses. Just over 5 grays measured doses of ionized radiation will normally turn humans into an irradiated toast. That's a bad way to toast anything, I think. I don't think I'd put a slice of bread in there.
Probably not.
When the beam zapped Pogorsky, it measured about 2,000 grays. When it exited near the left side of his nose, it blasted out at 3,000 suns, like brighter than flash of a 3,000 suns. And that's extremely intense, to put it mildly. After staggering away from the machine, the left side of his face swelled to enormous proportions. Later, the skin near the entry and exit wounds peeled away, and Pogorsky lost hearing in his left ear. However, the Soviet survived his mind-blowing experience. Perhaps the proton beam was moving at nearly the speed of light. Despite his good luck, Pogorsky eventually lost every nerve in the left side of his face, becoming partially paralyzed. The proton beam also damaged Pogorsky's mental capabilities, though not as badly as you might expect. Despite his handicap, Pogorsky earned a PhD and is still alive today, proving that it takes a lot more than a proton beam to kill a Russian.
Okay. That almost sounds like something that might come out of a Twilight Zone movie.
Totally true. I found that on the news. I looked up term weird brain stories, and it brought up a bunch of articles. And I do have some. And you kind of look at it as far as serial killers. You know, Charles Manson, he was just batshit crazy. I don't know how much you would say you're... like your parents influenced how they became in later life, their environment?
Well, that's really an interesting question. So for someone who's a psychopath, so someone like a serial killer, one theory of thought is that they are actually born that way. For people who are considered sociopaths, or in other words, would have antisocial personality disorder, so that's a less severe form, they're considered that they are more products of their environment, though they also have the genetic predisposition to become a person who's a sociopath or have antisocial personality disorder. So it's, in some circles, it's believed that if you are a serial killer, you're actually born that way. And environment may moderate it a little bit, but not much. But in no way am I an expert on serial killers or antisocial personality disorder. It's just a really fascinating area to study.
Now you go from Charles Manson, and I heard he kind of played up the craziness at his parole hearings, probably not too much, maybe mainly he had all those quirks, to put it mildly. But what would he have done if he'd gotten out? Wait for somebody to kill him, because they would make a name for themselves if they killed him. And I couldn't see him getting out and like working at McDonald's or anything like that. After all the publicity and books, and about, he was questioned by about everybody there could be, you know, media, medical people, and stuff like that. And then you go from Charles Manson, then you go to Ted Bundy, who doesn't really fit that kind of thing. You didn't know. I mean, he was fairly, you know, some women would find him attractive and successful at some point. But I know he had a breakup with a woman who was kind of bad. And I kind of wonder if sometimes if something switches off in their brain, that, well, she broke up with me and I'm going to take it out on all these women, or I don't know.
From what I've read about him, the breakup, and again, I am no expert, triggered more of revenge and wasn't as nearly as devastating to him. At least that's what some people think, because people who are sociopaths, those people can develop a bond with some people. The people who are the psychopaths, the more serial killers, they really don't develop much of a bond. They are very, very good at manipulating. They have incredible superficial charm. So they can pretend and people will believe that they really are in love with someone or they're infatuated with someone.
So you might say he was more of a sociopath because he kind of pretended or could get along well with people. And I know it, I did see a documentary on Netflix about him. And at one of his trials, one of the judges was kind of cordial to the guy. You know, he said, I wish I was standing here with you being an actual lawyer.
Well, both those with antisocial personality disorder and psychopaths are really good at manipulation, at charm, at letting people see what they want them to see instead of who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are very well-mannered. They fit into public really well. That's how they get a lot of things done in terms of the coarser things that they do. Because looking at someone like Ted Bundy, you're right. People said, well, he's such an attractive gentleman. He has fine manners, et cetera, et cetera. But they didn't know that he was moving from state to state, raping and killing women and then hiding bodies.
Yes.
And he looked like great normal guy on the street. He could pull that off very easily.
Yes. And you think about the parents of these people. I'm not sure if they were alive for Ted or not, but what they go through finding out that, you know, because when a kid is born, everyone thinks the baby's beautiful and all that. And you can't imagine that they would grow into something like that.
And that's very true. And I read a story about Jeffrey Dahmer from Milwaukee, in that his dad just really had to blank out that part of Dahmer because it was so incongruous. It just absolutely did not fit with how the dad knew his son, that the dad could not believe that his son could be such a monster, could bring young men home, rape them, kill them, drug them, and then become cannibalistic.
And sometimes eat parts of them.
Yeah.
That's a totally new breed of character there, Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just thinking about bringing him up, and it was surprising to me that his dad could go and see him and still.
And his dad, from what I read, of course I wasn't there, his dad was just able to, like, bring a wall down on that emotion or that characterization, excuse me, between monster and son. And his dad just said, no, this is my son. He's not a monster.
His dad actually thought he had a fairly normal childhood. Maybe the dad wasn't there as much as he should have been, you know, because I don't know. I think this might be true, but Jeffrey, and in some of these cases of serial killers, they begin by torturing animals.
You are very correct. Anyone who develops antisocial personality disorder and then goes on to develop the more severe psychopathic disorder has to have symptoms of conduct disorder before age 15. And one of the symptoms of conduct disorder is aggression to people or aggression to animals. Another symptom is deceit or theft. So there's already some really maladaptive things going on in that person's life during childhood or adolescent years.
How much would you say, no, I don't know about Manson versus Bundy versus Dahmer, if either of them or all of them had chemical dependency before?
You know, I truly don't know. I know I've read that people who have substance use disorders have a higher chance of being diagnosed as a sociopath or with antisocial personality disorder, but I don't know about those three in particular. Good question.
Yeah. Just totally bizarre. I think if I had a child and I saw the abuse of like a dog or a cat or even like a squirrel or something like that, I think I would get them into psychotherapy. Maybe try to nip some of that in the bud or spend more time with them and say, you know, kind of beat it in their head verbally, this is totally wrong.
You are right. I mean, it is a huge red flag. And then people really need to look closer at what else is going on, even under the surface, you know, because there's probably a lot more going on that people don't realize. And the child's already developing the ability to look good when he or she wants to, though it's more prevalent in males, but it can also involve women or girls. They're getting really good at manipulation. They already lack empathy. They're already having difficulty with what we consider normal human emotions, you know, sympathy, feeling badly about another when they're hurt. They lack remorse or they're headed in that direction. So a lot of problems starting soon. I'm going to tell you just a little tidbit. When my family and I were living in Michigan at the time of everything that was going on with Jeffrey Dahmer, our next door neighbor, awesome, awesome guy, his brother was the police chief in Milwaukee who was handling the whole Jeffrey Dahmer case.
Oh, wow.
And although our neighbor couldn't tell us anything at the time, you know, afterwards when information came out, he didn't really have any tidbits or anything, but it was just like, wow, what a small world.
Yes, it is. And to be have to investigate that. Can you imagine what it would be to be the first people to look at his apartment?
Oh.
Open his fridge or have to take stuff out.
And if you watch interviews of him, there's his face is just void of emotion. When he talks about what he did, he'll say, I knew it was wrong. I was obsessed with it. I wanted so-and-so, whatever young man, to stay with me forever. So I ate part of his brain.
Ugh.
I mean, it's just eerie.
How anybody could even remotely consider doing anything like that. But I was also, well, on some of the things you were talking about, the brain, am I mistaken saying Dr. Oliver Sacks?
Or, no, you are correct.
And he is, I didn't read the whole book, but I read a little bit about that he mistook his wife for a hat.
I believe that was one of his patients that
yes.
He treated. Right. He really phenomenal neurologist, Dr.
Okay.
Sacks.
I see. And also that this same person, he would, something with his eyes wasn't exactly right. And something, he had eye tests because he was going around like petting a fire hydrant or a parking meter like they were children.
Huh. I can't remember the name of that disorder. Now I wish I was like Mary Lou Henning, but I'm not going to come up with the name of that.
And that's another strange thing. And he also, Dr. Sachs also, one time, this person was barefoot, and he told him to put on his shoes, and he thought his bare feet were his shoes.
Interesting.
And I have to read further and to find out how that was treated, or if he, I don't know if he offers a treatment method for that.
I don't think that I have read that book, though I have read some of his other works. And he has some really incredible treatments that he comes up with, and they're just fascinating to read about.
Is it mainly through medication, psychotherapy, or a combination, or just any other ways?
Just actually really different ways. Not so much, at least from other things that I've read with him, not so much in terms of medication or psychotherapy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm trying to recall, and I'm blanking a little bit, but I believe there was a story about a person who, I can't remember if they did not have their left arm and they believed that they did, or they had their left arm and believed that they didn't. And he used a series of mirrors to test their reality and bring them back into whichever way the story was.
Oh, wow. I have heard that amputees sometimes get phantom pain, where they, like if their leg has been removed, that they sometimes feel like they still have it.
I think that that can be somewhat common.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an awful condition.
Yeah, to imagine that your arm is off. Maybe it was something he had. It wasn't related to an amputation, is what you're saying. That the
correct.
Oh, okay. So I'm bringing up a kind of a tangent there, but it's just how the brain perceives an amputation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would like to add, I didn't at first, but I'd like to add some applause for Julie for making time for this podcast, being a guest today. And we covered some very interesting topics about the brain on this 100th episode of Infotainment. And and I would like to thank her for joining me today.
It was such a pleasure. I really, really had a great time being your guest. And I think that that's probably more applause than I'm going to get this whole week combined. Thank you, Randy. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad I could do this and celebrate your 100th podcast.
Hopefully I won't have to edit your, I won't have to edit your part as much as mine, because I stumbled over some of that, but kind of technical terms, and I do not know as much as I probably should as far as my condition goes, but it's a very fascinating subject, the brain, for sure.
But, you know, give yourself credit. I mean, I've paid a ton of money in student loans, so that's why I know the words a little bit better and know the conditions a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Just be thankful you didn't have all those student loans.
Yeah. Well, I do try and do a little research on
yes,
different
you do.
Things.
Yeah, you have really interesting topics.
Because I, the people that have the ability to remember everything in their lives, it just boggles my mind. And I talked to one of my friends, and he said, I would never like that ability. Now, predicting the future, I would love that. As far as the Powerball or Mega Millions goes.
There you go. Yep. I'm right there with you. You bet.
Or developing time travel to go into the future to see what the next 500 years would be like, as far as, you know, 500 years in the future, will Facebook be around, or there'll be a whole different, like holographic internet, or
or will it turn out that the Matrix was really true?
And my friend Paul, who was 73, and I kept telling him that the flying car is coming, and he says, "Nah, they've been talking about that since the '60s," and he never believed it. And then we started seeing news stories about they do have some things in development. That the one I did see a video on, it looked like a really huge drone, but only one person sat in the seat, and there was no like storage or anything. But I would like to see more like a shuttlecraft from Star Trek, actually made, that you could just lift up with from your driveway and fly it. And of course, we have enough trouble with these self-driving cars right now, and people getting killed by those. Because people aren't paying attention. The other day, well, this has been a while ago, but I read a story where somebody was videotaping the driver next to him, and this person was totally asleep, and he didn't get in an accident while he was videotaping anyway, but maybe it was just a straight highway and autopilot.
Oh my gosh, that is insanity.
There is no way I would fall asleep on that. I would want to maybe not hands on the wheel, but I probably would, but have the ability to brake and turn it off at a moment's notice. Especially, it would be tough for me to use it in a big city downtown type traffic.
Absolutely, I agree.
The only way I would like try it out, or maybe try it out someday, the driving Highway 90, since I have a lot of South Dakota listeners, driving a 90 when it's fairly light traffic might be the best way to test that out.
Well, there's always construction on 90, so that might get in your way a little bit, but no, it's a fairly straight shoot. That's true.
Yeah, as tough as it is to manage traffic on our roads. And if you ever listen to, there's a show on the True TV Network called Adam Ruins Everything. Have you ever seen that show?
No, I haven't.
Where he debunks theories about what we believe.
Oh, that would be fun to watch. Interesting.
And he talks about the internet, which this will eventually go up to, that the internet here is basically controlled by three different cable companies. And of course, another added sound effect that I do not have, but we have the train horn in the background.
It just adds to the ambiance, right?
Yes, it does. But he talks about the internet being a lot cheaper and a lot faster than most developed nations in Europe. I believe they interviewed somebody in South Korea that the internet there was about 8 times faster and 1/10 of the cost. And in France, they said they had about 6 different options for the internet. And for me here in this high-rise apartment complex, I have basically 2 choices. I do not have dish possibility here for internet, which my computer place says that's the worst way to get the internet, because you're beaming it up to a satellite and all that. It's basically DSL through your phone line or cable internet. And they said, unless we update our infrastructure for fiber optics in our internet service in large cities, that we will probably remain in the middle of the pack for for internet speed and cost. Cost being higher than a lot of other countries because they have more competition as far as what service you can use for the internet.
Another interesting tidbit. Speaking of that, I probably need to get back to the office and write some prescriptions, which actually go through the internet. And I can tell you that is an awfully painfully slow process.
And with that, we'll thank Julie once again for joining us on this 100th episode.
Thank you, Randy.
And with that great interview, I'm going to close up shop on this, my 100th episode of Infotainment. You can email me at randyms12@gmail.com. And I posted one picture. I'm going to add some more. Some strange photos of a bride in full wedding dress. That is looking for a groom. She was on Tinder. If you can get by the goatee and the what looks like to be a huge amount of chest hair, go for it. And another one is like the worst facial tattoo on a woman that ever could possibly be. But that will be on my Infotainment Facebook page. You can tweet my Twitters at Randy Podcaster. And whatever else I got going. I haven't forgotten about the comedy club thing. That was going to go on the patreon.com/infotainment deal. I'm working on some bits. And it is hard. I've been in line for a stand-up thing that was during an open stage. And one guy asked, well, 3 minutes isn't enough time to do a comedy bit. And the owner goes, 3 minutes is eternity if you suck. And I don't want this to suck. And it's going to have like an authentic sound of a comedy club. So it should be fairly interesting if you'd like to become a patron. When I post that, further information on that will be coming forth. So I'd like to thank all my listeners who have stuck with me through most of these 100 episodes. And I'm going to wish you a happy ending tonight and a pleasant day tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.